Welcome back to Glitchcast, episode number 34. This week we are reviewing Skyscraper.
Skyscraper.
As an amputee in the tallest building in the world.
Isn't he just Dwayne now? Is he shedding The Rock?
He is. I'm pretty sure he goes by Dwayne.
I'm just gonna call him The Rock still though.
It's too easy. Like, how could you just, it's just such a perfect name. Like,
yeah. He is just a giant rock.
All right. Exactly. But first, we got a ton of movie news, some pretty good TV news, and a fair amount of trailers. We had to cut down on some trailers just because there was a lot. But movie news, I'm so excited to talk about this. The Mission Impossible Fallout reviews have started trickling in. I think that it had its world premiere last week, or at least critic premiere last week, and the reviews have been insanely positive. People are saying it's like the best action film since Fury Road, one of the best action films of all time, certainly like one of the top five of the 21st century.
So here's the thing. I want to get excited with you, but I remember Justice League. I remember Batman versus Superman and the positive Twitter impressions from people.
But this isn't just Twitter impressions.
These are actual critic reviews.
These are actual critic reviews.
Then I'm going to allow myself to get excited. I mean, I feel like the Mission Impossible series has been so consistently good that I wouldn't be surprised if this is the best one in the series. Like, they just keep getting better.
93% on Rotten Tomatoes out of 60 reviews, it looks like.
Jesus.
Fast, sleek, and fun, Mission Impossible Fallout lives up to the impossible part of its name by setting yet another high mark for insane set pieces in a franchise full of them. And I had sent you this review that this this guy that writes for IndieWire, this movie critic for IndieWire that I follow on Letterboxd, which is whatever, like this little movie review site. And he usually tears like big things like this apart and just like is more artsy about stuff. And he gave it 5 stars, which is the most you could give on Letterboxd.
Jesus.
And basically just called it like just like maybe potentially just like the best movie that he's seen this year.
Good God. Well, we will be talking about Mission Impossible Fallout, I think, a lot on the next episode, but I will now officially allow myself to get excited.
There you go. Proud.
Badass.
Something else to get excited for. This has been rumored randomly on and off in the past 10 years. A Zombieland sequel is officially happening, going to come out next year. Emma Stone, Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, Abigail Breslin, all back. Same director's back, Ruben Fleischer,
nice.
Who is directing the upcoming Venom movie. same writers are back, who wrote the Deadpool movies. And I think one of the original producers is back or whatever. Probably going to be an increased budget, I would assume, since, you know, it was such a success. But it's officially a go. It's going to come out next year, probably Halloween time. I'm pumped. I love Zombie.
Yeah, I remember seeing it. I think I only saw it once, but I loved it. I mean, when Bill Murray came in, that was a hilarious shtick. I feel like the third act, like the set pieces weren't that big, but it was still just like a fun, tight, like great comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Need
to
see it again.
It was a nice spin on like the whole zombie type of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think, I mean, it might have kicked off the zombie stuff. It might have been like right after it started, but like it was still good because it was just like it was a hilarious movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if like I even knew who Woody Harrelson was like all that well up until that point.
Yeah, that's a good intro to him then, because he was great in that movie. Tallahassee, if I think was his name. He had some ridiculous name.
Yeah, I think he was Tallahassee. Jesse Eisenberg was Columbus. I don't know what Emma Stone was. Abigail Breslin was Wichita, I think. I don't know what Emma Stone was, or one or the other. But I'm pumped. And they got the whole crew back, and clearly the writers have not lost a step with Deadpool.
So. Oh, yeah. Was the first one rated R? If it wasn't, this should be rated R, and that would be fantastic.
I don't know. I feel like it might have been PG-13.
You move on, I'm going to check.
It might have been R. They have at least one F word.
I think you're allowed one F word in a PG-13 movie, which...
You are.
Skyscraper's got one.
Yep.
Oh, it was that was R. I need to give this a rewatch for sure.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It's also just like a great. It's like a perfect movie that will like come on Comedy Central or FX or TNT like on a random weekend, like if I see it on, like I'm watching it. There's no doubt in my mind.
Just like Skyscraper will be in about 2 weeks. this was 2009. Wow, a long time ago. So this is what? Yeah. About 10 years later, we're getting a sequel.
Yeah, it's going
to
be 10. Yeah. Speaking of zombies, though, and Bill Murray, Jim Jarmusch,
Who
something,
that?
However you say it, who directed, he's directed a bunch of artsy films. He directed Patterson with Adam Driver.
Oh, his most recent Bus Driver. One,
about, like, yeah,
I didn't watch that one yet.
In, like, New Jersey. And then, like, Only Lovers Left Alive with Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton is, like, super old vampires.
Oh.
I've never seen any of his movies, but he's supposed to be a pretty good director. He's making a zombie comedy movie, yet another zombie comedy movie, with Adam Driver, Bill Murray, Selena Gomez, Chloe Sevigny, Daniel Craig, Rosie Perez, and I think Steve Buscemi also signed on.
Wow. So, I feel like I'm burnt out on zombie stuff, but I'm still down for zombie comedies. And I'm probably just saying that because I hate The Walking Dead so much now.
Bill Murray said that this is an absolutely hilarious script.
Nice.
Is what he said. And he's apparently a police officer in the movie. Not really any more details coming out about that. But Jarmusch, just based on what I've read about his movies and like what I know about his movies, it doesn't like I don't know how mainstream vibe this is gonna feel.
Yeah, from what I remember reading about Patterson, it was just like I felt like I was just watching a guy live his life and drive a bus and have real conversations with real people. This kind of just sounds like it'll just be a ho hum type, like meh.
Yeah, yeah.
But hey, we're getting two ends of the spectrum here.
Yeah, we could get a quiet hilarious movie.
And yes. A subtle.
Raunchy. Yeah. 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 Next up, Neil Blomkamp, Mr. Diminishing Returns.
Just,
I think is like the only way to describe
District
him.
District 9, then what? Elysium.
Elysium.
And then
Chappie.
Chappie, which we almost turned off.
Chappie might be one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
And I really wanted to like it, but God, that movie sucked.
Oh, man. He's going to direct the new RoboCop movie for MGM. So they rebooted RoboCop a few years ago.
Starring Joel Kinnaman from
he was in House of Cards.
He was in Altered Carbon.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, yeah.
And like no one even remembers this reboot. I didn't see it.
I certainly didn't see it. And so they're making it again with him. I guess like this has got to be his last chance at like an actual movie. I mean, like
Neil
Blomkamp. Yeah, if he blows this, he can't get
Is Charlotte Copley gonna be RoboCop?
Got it. I mean, he's got to be like on the short list.
He's in every damn like, movie.
Yeah, exactly. So apparently this is gonna do what like the Terminator movies are planning on doing and wiping out basically all the sequels.
It's the new thing.
And like the Halloween movies, or a new Halloween movie is doing. And it's going to be like a direct sequel because apparently the original writers wrote this script like a long time ago, never got made. They're on board as like executive producers. And then the guy that actually wrote the new Terminator script is writing this script or rewriting this script. And they're just going to, it's just going to be like a direct sequel.
Where's the audience for this? Like, I don't think people care, but it's just yet another name that they can't let sit. You know, they can't let a franchise sit for more than a couple of years without attempting a reboot.
I don't know what the audience is. It's like 40 to 60-year-old men that saw this originally and like...
I have nothing in me for RoboCop. I don't care.
It's like, I hear the name and like people talk about it and they're like, oh yeah, it's like a classic 80s action movie. And it's like,
fine.
Has anyone, like, people aren't going back to rewatch it, like, watching Terminator or Predator or something
that. It's all right. It's good. Yeah. But I don't know. Indifferent. And with Blomkamp, like, I kind of want to just see it just to see, like, can this dude find his spark again? Because District 9 was incredible. It was really good.
I know. I think District 9 got a Best Picture nomination that year.
It probably did.
How could you imagine directing a Best Picture nominated movie and then just total shit after?
And then getting Matt Damon to star in a sci-fi movie and then bombing.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
And then casting South African rappers as two stars of a robot movie.
I hated literally everybody in that movie, even Chappie. Nah, he was cool. Chappie's got stories. Chappie's real. Chappie's got feelings. Yeah, Chappie's got stories.
Oh, God. Next up, the Black Widow movie that is like 5 years too late is apparently happening. So they found their director, Kate Shortland, who has directed, who's an Australian director, best known for the Nazi drama Lore, which I've never heard of. But she beat out some other female directors, the Boys Don't Cry director, Melie Laurent, who is an actress, Maggie Betts, who made Novitiate, I don't know what that is, some other stuff. I don't know what this Nazi drama movie was that she made, so who knows. But what I've been reading is that a lot of people are a little worried about this, not just because like it's 5 years too late, and like I don't know if anyone really wants a Black Widow movie anymore, but also apparently the Black Widow story is like identical to what Red Sparrow was, that Jennifer Lawrence movie that just came out, and so it's like, oh, we're gonna make another like female spy, like Russian spy movie that's gonna be the same story that like no one even remembers Red Sparrow came out 3 months ago.
Yeah, I think it's too little too late. The window I think has closed here big time.
And ScarJo's kind of been controversial in the past couple of years.
Yeah,
whitewashing roles, all the roles that she's taking are, I mean, like, she took the Ghost in the Shell role. People weren't too thrilled about that. She actually just dropped out of that Rub and Tug movie that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, and so I don't know. She's like, again, I just don't know if she's a good actress either. Like, I just don't know how to feel about this. And like, this would have been good if it came out right after Avengers, I think.
I agree. Yeah, Avengers.
This was like Phase Two. Yeah, if this was Phase Two, that would have been good. But now it's like,
I think, as seen with Ant-Man's box office returns, like, people aren't ready to go back and like look at secondary characters pre the snap.
Yeah.
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 But before we move on, my voice is about to sound a lot sexier when I return. I've been using the wrong microphone. Be right back, gentlemen and women.
All right. Back.
I am back with a sexier voice. Please continue, Austin.
Yes, of course. Other superhero movie news, in a way a superhero. Joaquin Phoenix's Joker origin movie that's being directed by Todd Phillips, director of The Hangover, and Old School, is happening officially with Joaquin Phoenix at Warner Brothers. Martin Scorsese is executive producing or something. So we have this one that's going to be an origin story set in like the 80s in New York. And then we're going to have Jared Leto's one, which is going to be whatever Jesus the hell Jared Christ. Leto is doing. So that's happening.
I've talked about this the last time we brought this up. They'll probably go the route where there are multiple Jokers in the same universe, or they're just going to not recognize the other universes and say these are separate. We don't care about building a universe anymore. We've realized we cannot do it. We're just going to make movies.
I think that would be the right move for DC at this point. They seem to have trouble building franchises, so why not just do one-off movies? And then if a one-off works, there you go. You can try and make a sequel to it.
Yeah, stop putting all your eggs in a terrible basket.
Yeah, it's just like the best movie that they've made in this phase is Man of Steel, sadly enough. And it's like they were
incorrect. Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
But yeah, it's not going well. I'm fine with just random crazy directorial choices. Like this could be awesome and they don't have to try and shoehorn it into a universe. Just make good movies first, build the universe second.
Yeah, maybe a Warner Brothers executive is listening, and they'll this will really hit them in the heart.
We're gonna get attaboy once they figure it out.
Indiana Jones 5 has been bumped back yet another year to a summer 2021 release date. This movie, the chances of this actually happening have got to be like zero,
slim and none. Yeah, Harry Ford's gonna crash a plane, and then there goes that.
Jesus. Dark.
Dude, he's lost it.
Yeah, it's just like this clearly Indiana Jones 5 would just be what they tried doing with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and bringing in like a younger actor to like take over the mantle. But it's
have they said that they're going to try and do that?
No, but like, that's what they got to do, right?
Yeah,
he's so old. He can't like keep doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
And like he barely wanted to come back for Star Wars.
Yeah, it's like, I'll come back if you kill me.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe he'll say the same thing here. No, he actually likes the Indiana Jones character. He hates the Star Wars fandom, though.
Fair enough. That makes sense.
So, we'll see.
Can't argue with Harrison there. The last two Blockbuster stores in Alaska, which, so there's two there, and there's one in Oregon. That one is staying open, but the two in Alaska are closing. So that leaves one Blockbuster store left. First off, how are there still Blockbuster stores? I'm surprised that, like, they must be, like, whatever, just, like, franchise. They can't even be franchises, though, can they?
They have to be franchises where they somehow got the rights for the name and to continue under that operation during the bankruptcy. That last one will probably just stay open, like, as a museum.
Yeah.
Like, as a tourist spot.
I think it like already is kind of like a big tourist spot because like no one's going to Alaska and is like, oh, we need to go see one of the Blockbuster stores. But like,
well, my question is, are they still getting Blu-rays and letting people rent them out?
Oh shit, I have no idea. Probably, I mean, or maybe
they have to. Yeah, what is their like, business model then? People aren't going to Blockbuster for snacks. Like,
I do miss Blockbuster. Like, I'm thank God we have Netflix and all our streaming options now. But I do miss Blockbuster. It was always like fun growing up to go to like on like a Friday night and like pick out a movie, like walk around the store for 35 minutes looking at all.
Oh, I agree, but I will trade nostalgia for convenience any day. those were good times. Picking out games and movies and just being in Blockbuster for 20 minutes and knowing you're just gonna watch a movie at night. But hey, now we can just press a button.
True. And the company that essentially put Blockbuster out of business, Netflix.
No, they did. They put them out of business.
Netflix has fallen short of their quarterly subscriber expectations worldwide, I think only by like a million or something, and their stock dove pretty hard yesterday. I don't know how it's recovering today or anything, but they're still doing really well. This is like the first time in the last 8 quarters, I think it was, that they were below expectations, and they still grew by a ton.
Oh, yeah. They're still growing like crazy. It's just their growth is slowing.
Yeah.
They're fine. They went down 5.5 today. I estimate in a week they'll be back up, you know, 10-20%.
Yeah.
Investors like to overreact. People like to take their profits when there's any sign of bad news, but it's Netflix. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they said about Blockbuster.
That is it for movie news this week. Time for some TV news. First up, A24 has a comedy TV show that they're putting out. They've done one other TV show. Two other TV shows.
They have? A24 has done TV?
The first one that they've... Oh, no. They've only done one other one. Comrade Detective, which was like this like Russian detective show that they dubbed over with Channing Tatum and Joseph Gordon-Levitt's voice.
What?
Yeah. Which is super weird. I never watched it, and like they kind of like tried promoting it quite a bit, and I was just like, why would anyone actually watch this? Like, I get it. It's like it'd be like funny as like a YouTube video, but not like a TV show. But anyways, they have a new one called Moonbase 8, starring John C. Reilly, Fred Armisen, and Tim Heidecker as subpar astronauts at NASA's Moonbase simulator who want to be chosen for like the next mission to the moon. And so they're shopping this around the Portlandia creators, which includes Fred Armisen and this other guy, created this. So it's probably going to be sort of like irreverent kind of humor. But it's A24, so like I got to be on board.
A24, that cast and the words bumbling astronauts sounds hilarious. I never got into Portlandia. I really need to give it a watch. Have you watched all that stuff?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like, it's not like I'm not gonna like really pay attention to it like super in depth or anything, or like it's not something that you can like really binge, because like at certain points it's just like super weird and like too much. But but like it works as like a sketch comedy show.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds awesome.
Yeah. Joss Whedon has a sci-fi drama that just got ordered straight to series at HBO called The Nevers. Joss Whedon, famous for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Firefly, directing The Avengers, and Avengers Age of Ultron.
Dollhouse on Fox, which was canceled.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Nevers is described as an epic...
Hold on. Before you describe it, let me guess.
Okay.
There, I haven't read anything, but I imagine it's going to have a bunch of women that are strong female characters. Right?
That's what it sounds like.
Okay.
The Nevers is described as an epic science fiction drama about a gang of Victorian women, ding, 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 who find themselves with unusual abilities, ding, 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 relentless enemies, and a mission that might change the world. Ding, ding, ding.
Isn't he a diddler?
He is. He's either a diddler or he was domestic
abusive.
To his wife or ex-wife.
But I thought he was like using his position to cheat on his wife with actresses and stuff. Like,
oh, really?
How is this getting greenlit? And especially, it's just about a bunch of women.
I have no idea, because he was trying to make like the Batgirl movie for the DC universe, and then those rumors kind of came out, and then he stepped off or backed off of it, although they said it was creative differences. Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was around the time all those allegations came out, though. Yeah. Yeah.
So it is interesting that he's doing this. But, I mean, like, he's clearly proven as, like, a good storyteller for female characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I need, like, a little bit more. I need to see, like, a trailer before I can say, like, I'd be interested in this.
HBO going all in on the sci-fi. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I guess. But it doesn't even sound like straight sci-fi, though. Like, Victorian age? Like... It sounds like some weird, like, Van Helsing, Sherlock Holmes shit, you know?
I feel like those Victorian-style movies are over, too. Like, that, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Next up, Adam Devine has joined Danny McBride's HBO televangelist comedy series, The Righteous Gemstones.
Yes.
So pumped for this. This is Jodie Hill and Danny McBride, who made Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals together. John Goodman is in this. Danny McBride is in this. Series is going to tell the story of a world-famous televangelist family with a long tradition of deviance, greed, and charitable work, all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Devine is going to play the youngest son of John Goodman. Danny McBride is going to be one of the older brothers, obviously. And it sounds like they're all just going to be caught in, like, this power struggle for, like, the family and, like, the wealth behind whatever their church. I'm pumped for this.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds
Danny
amazing.
McBride and HBO, match made in heaven.
Yes.
Keep on cranking out comedy. Adam Devine, every time I see him, I want to punch him in the face, but he's hilarious. John Goodman, hopefully he doesn't get sucked into too much terrible TV on ABC or NBC or whatever that show that the Connors or whatever.
Yeah.
And he can keep doing stuff like this because he's probably in my top five favorite actors. He's so good.
He is. He is outstanding. And he feels perfect for this role.
Yeah.
I feel like he played like... Did he play like Jim Jones in like a Jonestown movie?
Did he? If he did, I need to see that immediately.
I don't know. I feel like he did. I could be wrong. Maybe it was just like a fat dude that looked like him. I don't know.
Probably.
Which would make sense because it was Jim Jones. But anyways, I assume this will be airing sometime next year, which can't come soon enough. Last news story of the week. Emmy nominations came out last week. We're not going to go super deep in it. The Emmys are kind of BS nowadays anyways. But... For the first time in 15 years, HBO doesn't lead the nominations. Netflix does.
Turning of the tides, baby. Is that even a phrase? Turn of the tide?
There's something. I feel like it might be. There's
something like Gandalf says.
Something with the tide.
It's my, how the turns have tabled. you know, HBO no more. Netflix taken over. Love it.
Yeah. I get their strategy of just throwing literally everything at the wall is working out. Regardless of quality.
They need to tone that down
a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, stock price is dropping. Come on.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for news this week. We're going to talk about our upcoming schedule here first before we get to trailers. So we might skip next week. We might not. Andy has a work trip / vacation kind of thing coming up here. So not sure if we'll have time to see whatever the newest movie is, which I think is Equalizer 2. Otherwise, we have some other ones on the back burner. But
I don't have you. I haven't seen Equalizer 1. So
oh, I have. It's not. It's whatever.
So I think if we record, we'll talk about something way more interesting,
which is Comic-Con news and trailers and whatever's coming out of there the rest of this week and the weekend. Huge. Always get a bunch of trailers. I know that we're getting a Glass trailer on Friday.
King Kong
for sure.
Versus Godzilla 2.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We get an Aquaman trailer, which actually just had their first poster come out. So we'll get a bunch of that stuff. So you can look forward to that. But if we are planning on skipping, we'll throw a little tweet out. But
yeah.
But at the very least, keep your hopes up for a Comic-Con news episode midweek, late week, next week. And then after that, it's Mission Impossible Fallout review,
yeah,
which will be great, which will probably be another midweek recording. We have a wedding that we both have to go to over that weekend, so.
There better be liquor.
All right, so that's it for upcoming scheduled news. Trailer time. First up is Extinction, which is a Netflix movie starring Michael Peña, Lizzie Kaplan, Mike Coulter, a.k.a. Luke Cage, who I don't think is a good actor. He seems really bad.
I don't either. He's not good.
A bunch of other people. So this is about, like, an alien invasion, but Michael Peña has, like, these visions or, like, bad nightmares and, like, is able to, like, kind of predict that it's going to happen. And then it happens, and then, like, it kind of feels like it devolves into, like, this action kind of thing instead of being, like, this more psychological thriller.
So Michael Peña, we recently just saw in Ant-Man and was hysterical.
Yep.
Lizzie Kaplan is Janice Ian from Mean Girls, I believe.
Yep.
So just coming from Ant-Man and then seeing him in this trailer, props for a little Mexican dude just getting like a leading role in what looks to be a very large budget sci-fi action film. But I couldn't take him seriously as like a leading man just because I came right from Ant-Man and he was so funny in that. And just like his character going from that to this, I was like, oh, I can't do it.
I'm trying
but
to.
I like the premise, but
yeah. It seemed cool, and I like couldn't tell if it was gonna be like this like invasion of the body snatchers kind of thing, or not. And then it was just like, oh no, it's just gonna be like alien invasion or something like that. Which I'm fine with. I mean, it looks cool enough that I'll probably watch it.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think. What has Michael Peña done that has been like serious? He was in Shooter, I guess. He was in End of Watch, although in End of Watch, most of the movie is just him and Jake Gyllenhaal dicking around together, and it's pretty funny, so it's, like, not even straight serious, and then Fury, he was in Fury.
No, the first thing I ever saw him in was that movie about, just straight up, just about racism, and it...
Oh, Crash?
Yeah. Wasn't he in that?
Yeah, I think so. The worst Best Picture winner of all time.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've ever actually watched that movie, so...
It's... fine, but also awful. Like,
but yeah, this is a Netflix. I don't even think it's a Netflix original. I think Netflix bailed it out. I think it was originally at Universal, and then they sold it, and they were like, "Somebody else take this."
I'm gonna say I don't think it looks that good, even though it's right up my alley.
Yeah.
I think this has got like straight up like, what was that movie that bombed by Duncan Jones lately?
Mute.
Yeah.
It's got that.
It just reminds me of that. It's got that vibe.
I guess we'll see what happens. Next up, On the Basis of Sex. So this is about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, starring Felicity Jones as Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We get Armie Hammer as her husband. Justin Theroux is in there as like an ACLU
with an
rights
awesome
lawyer.
Mustache.
Oh my god, he looks hilarious. He probably just went from Mute and just did that, just bang bang. And yeah, so this is just about her sort of starting out in her career and trying to change like gender equality or work for gender equality. I think it looks good. Oh, it's directed by Mimi Leder, who directed a lot of The Leftovers. So big there. I think it looks good, but I think the trailer was bad.
Mimi Leder did some of the best Leftover episodes, so now I'm like sucked back into thinking this looks good. So every week we have an agenda, and I almost said let's cut this because it looks really serious and Oscar baity. But I think it does look good.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. The trailer was a little much. A little dramatic. A little like, if you couldn't tell, we're going for Best Picture here.
Yeah. Even and then at the end of the trailer when they're doing like the headshots of like all the actors and actresses that are in it. And it's just like it felt like a lame like an 80s sitcom where like they like they like turn and look at the camera and smile or say something. And just like their name pops up, and that's exactly what it was. And I didn't catch on until like Kathy Bates popped up, and it was the exact turn and smile at the screen. And I was like, oh my god, what a terribly cut trailer.
I mean, it's a well-timed movie to come out these days,
relevant.
It'll probably be good.
Yeah. Next up, A Simple Favor. I think we might have touched on the teaser that came out like a month ago or something, but we'll go over this again. First full-length trailer, we get a little bit more. Blake Lively, Anna Kendrick, directed by Paul Feig. This is feels Gone Girl-y, kind of like. Sort of like this, like, kind of a thriller, kind of a, I don't even know.
First of all, I started cracking up when it said, from the darker side of Paul Feig. Paul Feig has done Bridesmaids, Ghostbusters, Spy, a bunch of just goofy-ass shit, and they're trying to make him, like, does he have a background doing anything dark? And, like,
I don't think so.
It's just, like, from the mind of Paul Feig. It was so dumb.
But
actually, I think the trailer looks pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty interested. I like that little French song that they were playing for, like, most of it, and then, like, whatever it devolved into, like, whatever's going on. Do you think Anna Kendrick is, like, secretly dark in this movie?
Yeah, so Blake Lively is kind of dark. Anna Kendrick is befriended by her. They start hanging out. She, like, snaps a picture, and Blake Lively's like, don't take a picture of me. And then all of a sudden, Blake Lively goes missing, and Anna Kendrick is kind of stuck in this little drama circle.
Yeah.
I really don't know what's going on with this movie, and I'm kind of, I want to know now.
I can't tell.
So, yeah, count me in.
Yeah, it was a good trailer. They really stuck this in.
Yeah.
Especially after the first one. The first one, we were like, who cares? Like, what's going on?
Except
here?
For the whole, the dark side of Paul Feig. It's like saying the dark side of Jim Carrey. Although, these days, that could work.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on with him. Next up is Boy Erased. Here's another Oscar movie. This is written and directed by Joel Edgerton, who also wrote and directed The Gift, that little
great
thriller
flick.
Movie from a few years ago. Starring Lucas Hedges, who straight up just is only in, like, awards movies somehow. Like,
he only plays sexually confused young men.
Just incredible work by him.
Yes.
Like, Manchester by the Sea was his debut. Then he went to Lady Bird, and now he's in this. It's like, he might have had one more in there, too. It's just, come on, dude. Mm-hmm. Killing it. Russell Crowe plays his dad. Nicole Kidman plays his mom. This is about basically a family sending their son to, like, this gay conversion therapy kind of thing, based on a true story, it says. I imagine this happened a lot. Did you know that, like, gay conversion therapy is, like, only technically illegal in, like, 13 states?
God damn it. I did not know that.
Yeah, read that, which is pretty messed up. But yeah, this looks very emotional. I was hooked. It looks like a perfect Oscar season movie, but not, like, Oscar baity, just, like, a straight great movie.
This looks really good, and a movie that I'm going to watch and get really upset during, that, like, stuff like this used to happen and still happens. But yeah, people are going to be crying during this one. This is Oscar bait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Joel Edgerton is actually also acting in it as, like, the head priest
head
of
conversion
whatever the
therapist
conversion
dude.
Therapy is. Yeah. Yeah. And he looks,
he'll be great.
He looks intense.
Russell Crowe just looks like a big fat, like, dad that, he's like, my son's no faggot.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He just looks like he's going to be a perfect stereotypical, we're going to send her to this camp. And Nicole Kidman just looks like she'll slay it as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Looks really good.
Pumped. And then last up is an official trailer for Castle Rock, which is a new Hulu series premiering at the end of the month. Sort of like a Stephen King universe kind of thing going on here.
Yeah, from what I read, it's similar to Fargo, where they're going to take liberties with the stories, but it's all going to be building a little mini Stephen King universe. So the real question is, Bill Skarsgård is in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Are they hinting at a Pennywise origin story, or is it just good casting? Like, they're just going to put him in there and ignore Pennywise?
I feel like it's just got to be, like, they're just good casting. They're just casting it for the hell of it.
Mike Hanlon from It was also in the trailer.
Oh, really? Interesting.
There were also balloons in the trailer.
Yeah, but there was a ton of Stephen King stuff in the trailer.
I agree. I'm putting it out there.
But it would.
I'll be watching. That's
yeah,
for sure.
I know, and I feel like we need more of, like, these, like, horror TV series, because like, what do we have? We have Channel Zero, which is, like, an
anthology. I need to watch that. Is that any good?
Yeah, I think so. I think the first season is okay. It's not as horror-y as I'd like. The second season was pretty good. It was, like, crazy. It was, like, sci-fi, but also, like, intense horror and kind of, like, psychologically messed up. I only got through the first couple episodes of the third season. I gotta finish that, and it was that the third season seemed like the most straight up horror.
I've heard it's better than the latest seasons of American Horror Story, so
oh, it is that a 100%. Yeah, it's not even in comparison to that trash. All right, well, that is it for trailers this week. That means it's time for Skyscraper Review.
Here we go.
So, we have Dwayne The Rock Johnson. We have Nev Campbell. We have two little kids. Ross and Marshall Thurber directed and wrote this. He made Central Intelligence, Dodgeball, We're the Millers.
So three really large set piece action films, right?
Yes. And he is on board to direct The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, in that Red Notice movie that is like apparently like a big deal coming out in a few years. So we got The Rock, who used to be an army member, a SWAT team leader. So
he was like a SWAT leader. Yeah.
And like the movie opens up on this is like it's the first scene, so it's not spoilers or anything. The movie opens up and it's like super serious. It's like a hostage situation. Oh, yeah. They send him in. And then, like, a dude blows himself up, and that's how The Rock loses his leg, and then he's, like, an amputee. And then we find out that he became, like, the security expert or security assessor, safety assessor, whatever you want to call it. And so he's going to check out the skyscraper, which is, like, the tallest building in the world. It's just, like, this absurd thing because they need to, like, get a third-party inspector to approve, like, the insurance claim or
insurance policy. And it's in Shanghai,
It's in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, okay.
Yes, Hong Kong. And so things go awry, as you can suspect. And so it's like Die Hard meets a Towering Inferno meets a Rock movie. What did you think about this movie?
Well, what did the audience think?
So, okay. The audience, first off, didn't flock to it. Let's say that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It finished third, only made 25 mil domestic. However, it did make 65 million gross, and I think it opens in China this week. It didn't open in China last week. This feels like a movie that was made for, like, the China box office. But it was behind Hotel Transylvania 3 and the second weekend of Ant-Man and the Wasp. So that's tough.
Let's talk about this then. Like, what factors are at play here? Yes, I did not see this coming. Transylvania 3 beating it out, Ant-Man week 3 or 2 beating it out. I mean, this is The Rock here. He's the highest paid actor in Hollywood, and he's debuting a large action set piece movie at number 3. Do you think MoviePass had any play here? Like, they were screwing people with peak pricing this weekend.
True.
I didn't see this coming, though. Like, this is a MoviePass movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I was, I guess I'm, like, a little bit surprised. I think, because the marketing was, like, pretty standard for what you get for like a Rock movie too.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that, like, and I think the movie ended up being like a little bit different from what the marketing was, but like I don't think word of mouth should have heard it or anything. Like, it's pretty, like, it's 49% critic score, 80% audience score, which is pretty good. It's pretty straightforward what it is, so I don't know, maybe people are just sick of the Rock movies like this.
We're getting some Rock fatigue, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
He doesn't pick good movies usually. Like, the best movie he's in these days is the Fast series. I mean, Jumanji,
I guess.
What else?
Yeah, yeah.
Moana, I guess. But, like,
yeah.
All of his leading roles are just, like, very mediocre movies, and maybe people are just getting sick of him.
It's possible. Yeah.
Let's just say this. You and I are huge movie buffs. If we didn't have this podcast and we didn't have MoviePass, I would not have gone to see this.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have gone see it. I would have just waited. Like, I didn't even go see Rampage, and I just waited until it came out on streaming to watch that.
Which is pretty much the same movie.
Yeah.
Like, well, not really, but just, you know, CG everywhere, The Rock doing stuff, being big. Although, I will say, in this movie, he felt a little nerfed, you know? It was good to see him take some hits and not be, like, unstoppable. I thought he was likable like he always is, but just kind of boring.
Yeah, he was. That is a great way to put it. He was likable, but he was boring. I don't know if it was the script or if, like, that's him, like, trying to act more serious or something, but it just, like, he just wasn't fun in this movie.
Yeah. And I think he just, like, he didn't do much out of the, like, he was just, like, out of the box. Like, he was just phoning in his lines, and I don't know. Yeah, it was a combination of the script and just, like, lack of enthusiasm for the role. Maybe he was just trying to play himself a little bit more subdued. He's got the missing leg. He's just trying to not be an unstoppable force, an unstoppable Rock. But I was just bored with his character, man. I was bored with almost everybody in this movie, actually.
Yes. I think this movie suffered from taking itself, like, a little bit too seriously. I don't think it's, like, I don't think it took itself as seriously as some people are trying to say, like, online, on forums and stuff, but they should have leaned into, like, the ridiculous aspect of it, maybe put in, like, a little bit more comedy, let, like, the villains act a little bit more outlandish. The villain was pretty good, as he was,
to be
honest. Hold on,
which one? Because there are, like, 9 villains in this movie.
The head villain that, like, we only find out why he's doing this at, like, the last 10 minutes of the movie.
See, I thought he was awful and just boring and cookie cutter and just, like, plugged from 9 other movies and just put in here to just say lines.
I thought he was better than average. I kind of wish the like owner of the building, the businessman or whatever you want to call him, I kind of wish he had more to do. At one point, he just, like, I don't know, he just kind of disappears and there's not much more of him. The other villains, yeah, there's a lot of villains. The not in the skyscraper villains suck. Just,
oh yeah,
wooden performances. Yeah. There's like a ridiculous hacker that is putting on like this Swedish accent, German accent. I don't know, but like clearly that was like a fake accent because it was terrible.
I just can't watch fast typing on keyboards and hear like. All right, I've hacked the mainframe, and I'm the only one in the world who has the Bitcoin encrypted key. Like, you're just saying words that are hot right now. What do you think about Neve Campbell? I thought she actually did all right with the terrible script she was given.
Yeah, she did pretty good. I don't think she was, like, outstanding or anything.
Yeah, she was fine.
But she was pretty good, and I like that, like, she wasn't just, like, the helpless wife stuck in this building. Like,
she could
actually
fight a little bit.
Yeah. Because she was, like, in the army, and they pointed that out as a backstory. So, like, it makes sense that she would be able to fight back and, like, know what to do in certain situations, like when a building is on fire.
What I really hated, and I think the kids were fine, and kids can ruin movies, but I hated the banter between the family. Daddy loves who?
Oh, my God.
Daddy loves who?
Me!
And that's in the trailer. But he kept doing the Daddy loves who? Daddy loves who? Shut up, The Rock! Shut up! And then when he's interacting with Neve Campbell, he's like, I love you, babe. And she's like, you better.
Oh, my God. That was terrible.
And she did it, like, 5 times. Just a smarmy little smile. Like, you better.
I would have been fine with the Daddy Loves Who thing if he did it, like, just once or twice. But, like, when things got super serious, it was like, you think he would just say, Daddy loves you. Or, like, I love you.
Like, stop doing a riddle rhyme. Like, the plane is crashing into the mountain here. We need to go. Say I love you. Move on. Don't do a riddle.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Go ahead.
I think
I got a couple more points.
My biggest problem with the movie was that, like, it feels like a lot of this could have been solved if there was just communication with the police force or law enforcement. Because, spoiler alert, the law enforcement has no idea what's going on in this movie. And it could have easily been solved if they're in this high-tech building. This dude just can't, like, make a call and be like, hey, people are setting our building on fire and they're trying to kill me.
There was a plot device for everything else in the building.
Yeah.
Like, he had a hole in the wall here. He had a button that could do stuff here. He had a hacker, like a computer that could flip the switch to do the next thing here. But yeah, he couldn't make a call to local law enforcement. Yeah.
It's brutal. Brutal.
There was so much goddamn exposition in this movie, it was painful.
Words?
If you don't know what exposition is, it's basically trying to tell what's going on in a scene or a story to the audience with words.
Yeah.
If it wasn't The Rock just literally talking to himself about what he needs to do next, it was someone else just saying, like, hey, if they don't do this, then they won't be able to get here. And if they don't get here, then they won't be able to do this for this part of the movie. And, oh, God, was it bad.
My favorite, there was a moment, God damn it, it's so hard to just, like, not just spoil this. There's a moment in this movie, small spoiler, where they're trying to get to this waterfall, and Neve Campbell straight up says, all right, we're going to try and get to that waterfall. And then they get split up, and then the two kids are, like, talking, and then they get split up, and then the son is like, just get to the waterfall. We'll meet you up there. And it's like, shut up. Like, how many times do you have to reiterate these things? And there's, like, 5 other times where they're like, key in on something, like an object or something like that, that you know is just like, oh, great, well, we know they're going to use that now. Or, like, they say something and then say it again 10 minutes later, and it's like, all right, we get it. Like, you're going
to
use that.
They're just spoon-feeding the plot to the audience. Brutal. Like, reiterating things multiple times. And there's some just god-awful foreshadowing in the movie, too, where it's just like, okay, this would not be a normal thing and a conversation that anyone would put in a movie for any other reason other than the fact that it's going to be a crucial plot point at towards the end of the movie. And I guess we'll talk about it in about 2 minutes here because I don't have much more else to say.
The head cop, the police chief, I don't even know what you would call him, has to be like the most inept cop in like history of movies. He like didn't do anything.
And he just lets Dev Campbell come in and tell him what to do, basically.
Yeah. And they're like, they get whatever suspicious or something, and then she like understands Chinese, and they're like, okay, all right, she's good.
Yeah, you're cool. Yeah, just a member of a foreign ex member of a foreign government coming in and just telling us what to do, but you speak our language, so you good, girl.
Oh man.
It was also one of the most derivative movies I've ever seen. Like, everything in this movie's been pretty much done before. There was nothing new here. Except, I guess, maybe the top of the building, which we'll talk about soon.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was
probably pointless.
Probably the only thing. There is a scene that is, like, ripped straight from, like, it was, like, the director watched Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol and then was like, how can I do that scene but make it, like, not as cool?
How can I do that scene but make it way worse and look way more fake?
Yeah. And, like, impossible. Like, it wouldn't actually work.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know if I have much else without just, like, being able to, like, talk about things freely.
I guess they're banking on overseas doing really well because it's set in Hong Kong and people are going to flock to see it. They love The Rock over there, too. But I don't know if we're getting a sequel to this.
I don't think so. The ending kind of hints in a way. There's a line that I laughed at personally, but kind of sets it up. But I don't think this thing's getting a sequel. There's no way.
What is your rating? You can go first this time.
This bad boy is getting a C.
Okay. That's better than I'm going to give it. There's a line in this movie that The Rock is about to do something just absolutely ridiculous, and he leans out of a window before doing something ridiculous, and he literally says, "This is dumb." That's a line in the movie, and I started cracking up because, like, did the writers just sneak that in there? Like, if they would have done more of that, like, just not taking themselves so seriously, it would have been a lot more fun. But The Rock is, like, he's got this crazy contraption that he built, and he's about to do something just unbelievably stupid, and he just goes, "This is dumb." And then he just does the thing. That sums this movie up for me. This movie's getting a D.
A D?
A D.
Holy shit, is this, like, the lowest-rated movie that you've had? I think
so. It was ugly to look at. It was ugly to look at. The CG wasn't very good. The story was bad. All the acting was terrible.
I feel like I got to defend it now. I think it deserves more than that. Hey, it's like I knew it was going to be. It was bad, but it was like entertaining bad. Entertaining bad.
We always agree on scores, so I am ready to argue with you.
I think it was like entertaining bad. All right. Well, those a C for me, a D for him. Non-spoiler, done. Spoilers now. Let's talk about the one thing that was new. The pearl, I think they called it.
Yeah, so we were wondering what's at the top of the building and the big... I think they wanted to make it a tourist attraction at some point.
Yeah.
And it's just a big sphere, and they walk into the sphere, and it's a bunch of 8K camera resolution on the outside, but then TV screens on the inside that pop up and... You can go through this like crazy maze, but then also when all the TVs go down, you can look like you're standing out on the edge of the earth, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was pretty cool. that scene where he first shows it to him, and then he just like walks out and like you can't see where the door is. I was like, how's The Rock gonna get out of here? Is he just trapped?
If I was
there?
The Rock, I'd be what if The Rock has like a crippling fear of heights? Well, I guess he wouldn't have taken this job if he did, but if he was just like, hey, ground's gone, lol, and then just goes and hides, like
that would have been a good also, they should have made him have a fear of heights, because they pointed out that having trouble with his small security assessor business or whatever, and so like this could have been like the only job he could have taken, or could have gotten. It was like he had to take it because he needed it, and like they should have done that. That could have played into humor too.
It would have neutered him a little more. It could have been funny. When the Chinese guy was just showing him the cube or the sphere or whatever, I got kind of sick of just watching him walk around with like a smirk on his face, being like, "Welcome to heaven. I bet you've never seen anything like this before. I am so smart. I create this building." And he's just walking around with a smirk on his face. Like, I was like, I just wish The Rock would punch you in the face.
Oh, man.
That guy was in Batman as a guy.
Yeah. He was the one in The Dark Knight where he goes and gets him from like the building and wherever. Mm-hmm. At the very end, the fact that they like, God, yeah, they do really think the audience is so dumb with this movie. At the end, when like The Rock is like, "We have to come up with this plan," and then they go up there, they don't tell you what the plan is, and they go up there, and then like the Asian dude pulls out the gun on The Rock, and it's like, and he's like, "What? This isn't a part of the plan." And it's like, you know damn well everyone in the audience knows that this is part of the plan. So stupid.
I actually was confused by that, because moments later he's like, "Hey, thanks for the help. You almost had me convinced." So did they really come up with that plan?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was saying that because like he was like, "Oh wow, you acted pretty well there."
Jesus Christ. There, I will give the movie this. There are a couple scenes where it actually looked pretty good, and I was like, "Oh damn, he's really high." Let me ask you. You have a fear of heights, I think. I don't. Mm-hmm. Yes. And there are a few scenes where I was like, "Oh shit!" Like that would be really scary. Did it get you at all? Did you get sweaty?
The only time where like I noticeably was like getting uncomfortable and like kind of freaking out and like I could feel my palms like just like dripping in sweat was the
Mom's
crane
spaghetti.
Scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The crane scene got me. Just like when he was climbing up, it was the climbing up part that really got me. And then once he was up there, I was like, okay, well.
It was just the scenes I think that were from his first person view where he's like teetering over and looking down. Those were pretty good.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the crane scene, because ain't nobody ever making that sort of jump. Like that's just
unbelievable. I think if it was a person with two fully functional legs or if it was a person even with a prosthetic leg that like didn't limp with their prosthetic leg, I think they could make it, like if they were like the Rock's build or like athletic or whatever. Because
someone who has been through hell for the last 2 hours and literally just climbed, you know, how many stories in freaking 20 minutes. Yeah. I mean, he had to be winded, tired.
Pump full of adrenaline.
And he is the Rock.
Determined to save his family. But I like how the poster like exaggerated that the distance between for that jump so much compared to like what the movie was. The movie is still ridiculous, but like it's like, okay, I could kind of see that it may be happening or working. But like the poster was like, it's like 75 feet.
And then when he like lands to like barely makes it and grabs, I'm like, there's broken shards of glass everywhere. Like your hand would have been cut in half, but of course, at no point. Did I fear any main character's life at all? Like,
it's
there's
also,
no tension in this movie.
Yeah, also just a ridiculous thing to, like, act like someone would be able to take in all that force on their arms, slamming in, and be able to hold on. Like, that's impossible.
And then pull yourself right up. I mean, how much does The Rock weigh? Come on.
Yeah. When he was, like... essentially like the pull-up bars, like the monkey bars on the bottom of the crane, when he did like the little switch and flip, that's what got me. And like when he like kind of slipped, oh man, that killed me. That was like was the scariest moment for me.
The one that was one time where I go, oh shit. Like, dang, all right.
That was like the one like innovative thing that they did, because usually it's like, oh, he's just gonna like slip with one hand and hold on, but like no, he like fell and like had to grasp. So one difference.
Did you think that the bad guy, one of the nine bad guys, was pretty obvious right away, where it was like his second security expert?
The insurance guy.
Oh, yeah. Which, yeah, I figured he was going to backstab immediately. But I actually liked that first fight. I think that first fight had a lot of tension and was well choreographed and actually both of them took some hits, I was like, I'm in for a good surprise movie here.
I know. I was jacked after that first fight. And then it kind of just devolved. And, like, they got, like, too obsessed with just, like, being engulfed in flames while the fight was
so
happening.
So much fire. Yeah. So much fire. So much fake fire.
There was a lot of killing in this movie.
Of the bad guys? Yeah.
No, of everyone.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, I guess like, a couple good guys die.
They just, like, bystanders, too. Like, just murdered, like, the entire, like, off-site security thing.
Did they?
Yeah. They opened fire
on
them.
That's right. Like, shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah, and they killed, like, a bunch of police officers after that first fight scene.
That was generic villain number 7.
Yes.
The girl with the short pixie haircut.
Yes.
Was just yet another villain who I thought would have a cool fight scene, but got beat by Neve Campbell's hips in a cop car.
yeah, pretty much. Well, no, Neve needed the police chief to run over because she was getting choked out by the seatbelt.
I feel like Neve had her in a leg lock at some point, though.
Oh, she did. She did.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a back and forth.
Can you remind me why The Rock needed to attach himself to a pillar, dive out of a window, say this is dumb, and jump into the spherical fans places again? Was that to cut a cable to open a door,
I think? Yes, it was okay. to cut the cable that was responsible for like the penthouse door that only the businessman was able to control.
Got it. I couldn't remember, and I was like, who puts a control panel out there? But I guess that wasn't a control panel. It was more of just like this is an alternative way to get the thing that I want. How he would know how to do that, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then actually just right after that scene, like when The Rock does like say like, well, we're going to have to give that to them. Like we have to go up there. We have to come up with a plan because I care about my daughter and that's it. It's like, why would the businessman agree? Why does he care?
Maybe he's noble. Maybe he's a really good dude. But yeah, he's like, if I was a business guy, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, you can go.
Feel free.
I'm in a titanium lair. Like, I'm going to wait this out.
Oh, God. Yeah, some backwards logical leaps there. Yeah, there was just like a whole lot of like people just like not questioning something or just like automatically having an answer to something where it's just like, oh, well, the plot just needs to move along, so we're not going to actually do any of the legwork for it. Which is another thing. Like, that would be fine or it'd be more acceptable if they just leaned into how dumb it is, but they didn't. And so you kind of like notice it even more and you're like, oh, well, what the fuck? Come on.
Anything else before we get to the final scene, the showdown in the sphere that no one saw coming?
Also,
the resolution of the tower, which no one saw coming how that was going to happen.
Just turn it off and turn it on again.
No, I can't really think of anything else. Oh, when he drops Neve and his son in that elevator. I was like, they gotta die. Like, there's no way that works out.
Yeah. Also, wouldn't they just be flopped up to the ceiling and
right?
just like
yes.
That thing didn't just fall. That thing was shot down.
That thing was going like 100 miles per hour.
Yeah. And she's just sitting on the ground like, we're gonna make it.
All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, lever. Yeah. And then they don't move at all.
Yeah. And then it also didn't ever show them like landing. It just cut to another scene. And I was like, are they dead? Oh, God. As far as the ridiculous foreshadowing about turning the phone off and turning it on again, I was really pumped, first of all, that they really drilled that into people's heads because I'm in IT. I am often the default tech guy in a lot of situations, and I have trained my peoples to turn stuff off and turn it on again because The Rock is correct. 99% of the time, that fixes the problem. So all you listeners, if you got a problem, don't bug your IT guy. Reboot it.
I like to think that the writer/director, his wife, just like constantly bothers him about that kind of stuff, and that's what he said to her. And then like he was like, "Wow, I would love to put that line in a movie and have that be the pivotal moment." And then he was like, "All right, I'm just gonna write a movie around that."
Yeah, I think he just came up with that line after haggling with his wife or arguing with his wife, and just wrote this movie out of it. That makes me like it even more. Grade changed.
Oh, man.
So they go up to the freaking sphere. There's TVs everywhere. It just turns into like a funhouse maze showdown.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. It was
everybody's
lame.
Shooting at each other. They yeah. can't see. They're just hitting TVs. There's a kid running around. Daddy, where are you?
yeah. They that was so dumb. It was like they just like faked you out so many times, and like there was never consistent fake out. It was never like, oh, that looks like a mirror. It was only like sometimes that looks like a mirror, and then like times where it looked like a real person, it just turned out to be a mirror again. And it was like, how are these mirrors working? Like, I wish like I could understand what was happening in that scene, because like it might have made the action a little bit more entertaining. But I
maybe
just
there would have been some tension.
Yeah, yeah, had no clue what was going on, except for when The Rock is standing right in front of him. I knew right away that he was a mirror, and I was like, so dumb.
So
I'm so, right behind you.
This is life or death. This is life or death for him and his daughter. Okay, before that, no, this is after. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. Why does he gotta do the theatrics? Just sneak up behind him and kill the guy. Like, he's like, he goes through this whole speech, and he's like, but there's one last thing I want you to know about this current situation. I'm actually behind you. Booyah! Like, your daughter might die, man. Just get it over.
The way you just said that was like how Will Arnett would say a line in like the Lego Batman movie. And like, yeah, some shit that exactly. would like actually happen in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, that's ridiculous. Especially for his character who like was not like theatrical at all the rest of the movie. Like over theatrical, like trying to like be dramatic or like intense or whatever.
So he kicks him through a hole, I think. Yeah, he kicks him through a hole with a grenade.
Yeah, and then the grenade
dude explodes. generic villain number one explodes. And then it's not over yet, right?
No, it's not over because they don't know how to get down. There's still fires raging. Yep. And then Neve Campbell is testing it out. And then she hits like one thing, like the fire put out her button, and it goes, system failed. Reboot system. And she was like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
And then magically all the coolant starts working, which apparently why wouldn't that have worked in the first place when the fire started? Beyond me.
I first of all, before she reboots it, I was laughing that The Rock just gave up.
I know.
At one point he's holding his daughter, he's like, I'm sorry, babe. We're gonna die. It's over. I don't know why he's a southern hick now, but I was just like, really? Like, do something. I was like, I know you're not gonna die, but like, keep trying. Say, daughter, stay here. I'm gonna go get a fire hydrant. But yeah, she reboots it. All is well.
The police chief goes, "What did you do? I rebooted it. I turned it off and back on.
Turned it on again. It's a good thing this giant, most sophisticated system for the largest building in the entire world has a reboot time of like." Under a minute.
Yeah,
it's a good thing that she didn't completely screw herself out of trying other buttons and options where it's like, all right, reboot will be complete in 8 hours. Like, why'd you turn it off? I got a tech guy. He just showed up. He's got to put in one code and everyone's saved. Oh, I just wanted to turn it off and turn it on again.
That's another thing. Is like the police chief was like, or the police was like so unprepared that they like just let Neve Campbell just start handling all of the business with it. Yeah. It was like, shouldn't they have, like, more people ready for this? It's like, this is a gigantic building that literally might collapse because it's on fire. Feels like there should be a little bit more urgency and importance.
He goes, hey, hold on. Let someone who knows what they're doing do that. And she goes, no, screw that. I'm doing it. And then he's like, okay.
Right. Yeah, he goes, take her away immediately after she says that. And then, like, you couldn't see the generic villain, woman villain before because he had her like down, and then he just pulls her off and he's like, where did she come from? And then he's like, okay, do it.
Yeah.
Oh man. Wild stuff. Last line of the movie, or one of the last, not the last line, but one of the last lines.
Here we go.
Is when they're in the helicopter and he goes, well, what will you do? Asian guy goes, rebuild.
We must rebuild. Yeah. I will rebuild.
I gasp laughed at that because I was like, no way. You can't do it. Come on. Come on. Oh, is he going to like turn in that hard drive too of like literally the entire like three biggest crime syndicates, or is he just going to hold on to it forever? You know,
just more leverage they got of the sequel.
Yeah, the sequel, yeah. Just have Biggest crime syndicate.
Because they did hint at the what was supposed to be the top villain did hint at. He's like, no big deal. I can't do it. My boss will kill me. Yeah. Like, so there might be a bigger, badder, yeah. baddie out there. So, yeah.
All right. Well,
I had more fun talking about this movie than watching it. So my D remains.
I'm sticking with a C. You should not pay money to go see this, but when it's on FX next year, I say give it a watch. Because I wouldn't expect it to be bad, and it was bad, but I think it was just enough on the good bad side of things, entertaining bad side of things, that like it was enjoyable enough for me.
And if you watch it on FX in 2 weeks, which where it will be, you'll only miss one F-bomb. You're going to get me that USB, or I'll throw your daughter out the fucking window. They wasted the F-bomb on the villain. Why didn't The Rock get to say it?
The Rock was too bland in this movie. He doesn't show that emotion.
So boring. So boring.
All right. Thank you for listening. Remember to like, subscribe, share, review, comment, all that fun stuff. And tune in next week for our Comic-Con News episode.